Today is the 19th Sunday after Pentecost, and these are the announcements. There will be blessing of articles after Mass today at the communion rail. We are starting benediction of the Blessed Sacrament Sunday evenings once again, so there will be benediction this evening at 6 p.m. Catechism classes will begin this coming Saturday, October 9th, after the 8:30 a.m. Mass. Please sign the paper in the vestibule if you would like to enroll your children. So just to recap, there will be blessing of articles after Mass, benediction this evening at 6 p.m., and catechism classes will begin Saturday, October 9th, after the 9:30 a.m. Mass. The feasts this week. Today is the feast of St. Therese, little child, that we have here in the statue. Monday, St. Francis of Assisi. Tuesday, St. Placid and Companions. Wednesday, St. Bruno. Thursday, Our Lady of the Holy Rosary. Friday is the feast of St. Bridget. And Saturday, the feast of St. John Leonard. Before I speak about read the Epistle and Gospel for today, I have to tell you a little bit of the story of St. Therese, the little flower, as she's called. St. Therese of the Little Child. And just like her name indicates, just like devotion to the child Jesus, devotion to the little flower is magnetic. People seem to be drawn to this saint. Very interesting. If you wanted to accomplish great things in your life, perhaps be known across the world, according to the maxims of the world, it seems like you would want to live a life that is the opposite of St. Therese's life in every way. Here she was, only 24 years old when she died, a cloistered nun, completely separated from the world. She was not responsible for any great renewals, Catholic movements, preaching in foreign missions. And yet it was this saint here that Pope Benedict XV called the saint that discovered the secret of sanctity. It was through her secret life of prayer and sacrifice that she won the title the greatest saint of modern times. This simple nun. She lived to the year 24, like I said. 2 years before her death, her superiors told her she needs to write her autobiography. And so in whatever small amounts of spare time she had, she would take it, scratching away on these small pieces of paper, writing down the important moments of her life. And that story of this simple nun's cloistered life was so popular that by the early 20th century, it had been translated into all the major languages of the world and spread globally. That's how attractive her little way, as it's called, her little way to sanctity was and is. Someone recommended this book to me, her autobiography. It's called The Story of a Soul, I'm sure you'd find it if you just looked up St. Teresa's autobiography. Someone recommended this to me a few years back, and I read it, and it's amazing, very powerful. If you haven't read it, I suggest you do. Very impressive how this saint that didn't seem to have anything in common with me was able to speak to me. She's a living example of the power of prayer. She was made the patroness of foreign missions, a cloistered nun, because she helped these foreign missions so much by her prayer. There's a wonderful story of her when she was very young, before she had entered the convent, and she had decided that prayer and sacrifice were going to be her weapons against the world. And so she had heard this story of this notorious criminal, murderer. His name was Pranzini. And she had heard that he was unrepentant. He had refused to see a priest. And so she said, I'm going to start praying for this man and praying confidently that God will convert him. So this is a quote from her. She said, My God, I am sure thou wilt pardon this unhappy Pranzini, and I shall still think so, even if he does not confess his sins or give any sign of sorrow. Such is the confidence I have in thy unbounded mercy. But because this is my first sinner, I beg from you just one sign of repentance to reassure me. And so this criminal went to his execution, and the next day, St. Therese, a teenager, she went up and she looked at the paper. It was telling the account of him going to the guillotine to have his head removed. And the priest was trying to convince him to confess his sins, and he was refusing obstinately. And they were dragging him to the block. And right before they laid his head down, he took the crucifix the priest was holding and he kissed it 3 times. And so St. Therese was thinking, that's one. If we have people in our own lives that are in need of conversion, we should never forget the power of prayer. More powerful than any argument, any proof. And maybe we should invoke this great saint as well. The epistle for today's Mass is taken from St. Paul's epistle to the Ephesians. Brethren, be renewed in the spirit of your mind and put on the new man, which has been created according to God in justice and holiness of truth. Therefore, put away lying and speak truth each one with his neighbor, because we are members of one another. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down upon your anger. Do not give place to the devil. He who was wont to steal, let him steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands at what is good, that he may have something to share with him who suffers need. Please stand for the Gospel. The Gospel for today's Mass is taken from the account according to St. Matthew, chapter 22, verses 1 to 14. At that time, Jesus spoke to the chief priests and Pharisees in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a king who made a marriage feast for his son. And he sent his servants to call in those invited to the marriage feast, but they would not come. Again he sent out servants, saying, 'Tell those who are invited, behold, I have prepared my dinner, my oxen and fatlings are killed, and everything is ready. Come to the marriage feast.' But they made light of it, and went off, one to his farm, another to his business, and the rest laid hands on his servants, treated them shamefully, and killed them. But when the king had heard it, he was angry, and he sent his armies and destroyed those murderers and burnt their city. And then he said to his servants, 'The marriage feast indeed is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Go therefore to the crossroads and invite to the marriage feast whomsoever you shall find.' And his servants went out into the roads and gathered all whom they found, both good and bad. The marriage feast was filled with guests. Now the king went in to see the guests, and he saw there a man who was not in a wedding garment. And he said to him, 'Friend, how didst thou come here without a wedding garment?' But he was speechless. Then the king said to the attendants, 'Bind his hands and feet, and cast him forth into the darkness outside, where there will be the weeping and the gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen.' Thus far the words of today's Holy Gospel. So before making a deeper examination of this Gospel, let me briefly review in your minds the meaning of the parable, which I'm sure you've heard before. As the fathers of the church tell us, this king represents God the Father. And this marriage of his son is the incarnation. The union of his son with the human race. And he sends his invitation, the first invitation, to his chosen people, those who were invited. And this represents the prophets to the Hebrews. And they were rejected. And so he sends more servants, the apostles, the actual witnesses of Christ's life. And they were not only rejected, but as it says, treated shamefully and murdered. And so the king, filled with just anger, sends his armies and destroys those people and burns their city. What he's referring to there, of course, is the destruction of Jerusalem under Titus and Vespasian, who became emperors later of Rome. If you want an account of God's justice, you can read the account of that siege, written by Flavius Josephus, who was a governor and commander of the Jewish army who was arrested by the Romans. First-hand account. It reads almost like a novel in parts. And it is apocalyptic. I can't get into all the details there. But then he says, after he destroys these enemies, he says, go out into the crossroads and bring in those you find. The vagabonds, good and bad. That's us. The Gentiles. And call them in. And after they're called in, he sees this man who is not wearing the wedding garment, which is a symbol of sanctifying grace. These garments were given to guests when they came in. And so it was an open insult for him to reject it. And he knew he did something wrong, because when he asked him, he had no answer. So he had him bound and thrown out, which represents damnation. And there's two themes that run through this whole narrative. Reward for the good and punishment for evil. The attributes of mercy and justice. And goes even farther than that. As is usually the case in the divine office for today, the readings perfectly dovetail into this Mass. Around this time, we're reading about the story of Esther. She was this Hebrew, this Jewess, unbeknownst to the king that she married, this pagan king. And through her influence, she was able to save her people. And you see that mercy and justice at play in this story as well. How the man who was plotting against God's chosen people was the one who was put to death. And those who were being attacked were the ones who were elevated and celebrated. Mercy and justice. It's important to, and that's what I'm going to do today. I'm going to talk about the definition of an attribute and how mercy and justice do not contradict each other but complement each other in the divine essence. This probably seems a little bit esoteric, a little bit obscure. I'll try to make it easily digestible, but it is nonetheless very practical. I remember a couple years ago, I was listening online to this atheist who based his entire argument on why God does not exist on a misunderstanding of these two attributes. And so you may very well come across the same argument and have to make an answer yourselves. This was his argument. Theists, those who believe in God, hold that God is all merciful and all just. Mercy, by definition, is a suspension of justice. Therefore, God cannot be all merciful and all just. He has to lack one or the other. And therefore, he is not God. Kind of a tricky one. So let's first take a look at attributes. Let's define what an attribute is. These kind of are layered on top of each other, so you have to stick with me. So an attribute. An attribute is something that is attributed, a property that is attributed to a nature. It is demanded of that very nature. So, for instance, one of the attributes of man is that he's rational. Okay. So man has the qualities of life that vegetative life has, the plants around us. He can reproduce, he grows. He also has the attributes of sentient life, you know, the dog or a cat. He can sense the world around him. He can feel pain and so on. He has emotions. But that defining attribute is what they call ratiocination, rationality. But this is the important thing. an attribute, even though it's tied, it's demanded of certain natures, they call for it. The nature of the church, for instance, it calls for infallibility just by its very nature. That's an attribute of the church. So even though it's an attribute of man, it is not essential to man. Even though he is a rational creature, he might not actually practice rationality. Very fine distinction, but it has disastrous consequences if we mess that up. Because if we define man by the expression of his attributes, we can find ourselves throughout history putting together camps to euthanize those who are not able to practice rationality. Or we might define human life by the ability to care for oneself after birth. They're not human in the womb, right? Because they don't have that attribute yet. Ideas have consequences. So even though it is attached to a nature, it is not essential to it. It is just attributed to it. Sort of added on, you could say. So knowing this definition, if we apply this to God, because we speak about the attributes of God, we can see that it doesn't quite fit. We cannot use that term in its strict sense when applying it to God, an attribute, because everything that God has, he is. He has nothing added on to him. He is pure, simple actuality. So he does not possess truth, he is truth. He does not possess goodness, he is goodness itself. Okay? Still with me? So when we apply this term attribute to God, we're using it in an analogous sense, as an analogy. In our human mind, it makes it far easier if we can break it up the way we can break up things in the created world. God is pure goodness, and that goodness can be viewed from the perspective of mercy or the perspective of justice. But it is all God's goodness. So if we go back to what that atheist was talking about, he's saying these two attributes in God, as if they exist the same way as they do in us, they are opposed to one another. And that's not the case. They are both expressions of his one unified, indivisible goodness. I could go even farther with an example. If someone owes you $100 and they decide to pay $200, you would not consider that a breach of justice. He was not violating anyone's rights by doing that. It was above and beyond what he was required to do. And it's the same with God. When we ask for forgiveness, he offers forgiveness above and beyond our merits. It is not violating justice, it is going beyond it, surpassing justice. We commit a sin, we have that temporal punishment due to our sins, meaning we have to make up for them by prayer and sacrifice, living a good life. of what he demands as far as that temporal punishment is concerned is nowhere close to what our sins warrant, is it? As the supreme lawgiver, the creator of these laws, he violates no one's rights when he shows us this excess of mercy. As one writer puts it, the overflow of justice, this superfluity of God's goodness and mercy, is the perfect completion of justice in God's mercy. It is pure, gratuitous love. This understanding helps us appreciate this mercy even more. Helps us realize how little we deserve it. The fact that we have no right to ask for it. And the fact that we all need it desperately. We must take advantage of this generosity, especially in this month. This is the month of the Holy Rosary. If you were here for Father Ward's conference on Friday, you heard the numerous quotations from the saints promoting the Holy Rosary. I assume everyone here has their rosary in their pocket right now. That's what Catholics do. Father read this one quote from Saint Alphonsus. Those who say the rosary, wear the brown scapular, and do just a little more, we'll go straight to heaven. Talk about reward beyond our merit. And I can tell you, I am assisting with the vocations that come in. We've had many hundreds come in over the last couple years, inquiries, interested in the priesthood or brotherhood, or just interested in our community, asking questions. And I'm the first point of contact. So I weed out those who are clearly unfit. But I'll tell you that out of all these hundreds of people who have contacted us, the ones who not only have the best potential as a vocation, but those who persevere, inevitably, and I mean 100% of the time, have a devotion to the Holy Rosary. Every last one of them. There are many examples. This is just one. This man didn't end up having a vocation, but it was an impressive story. He said, when he's telling his story to me, he said his mother was an alcoholic, and his father was addicted to drugs, methamphetamine. And he was never raised with a religion. and he grew up in an awful environment, as you can imagine. But he was introduced to the Catholic Church almost randomly, walked into a church, and was introduced to the rosary. And now he prays it every day. He's converted to the Catholic faith. And he cares for his parents now, who didn't care for him. Wow. That's the power of prayer. So hold on to those beads, especially this month. Pray the rosary every day. And God will hear our prayer as the introit says for today's Mass. I am the salvation of the people, saith the Lord. In whatever tribulation they shall cry to me, I will hear them, and I will be their Lord forever. May God bless you.